What's up, Gator Nation?
Good morning, Gator Nation.
You're listening to Gator Nation.
And the Gators have the biggest lead of the day.
You're listening to Morning Edition on WUMT.
From the University of Florida, College of Journalism and Communication.
3, 2, 1, we're live.
Hi, everyone. This is The Communicator, the University of Florida College of Journalism and Communications podcast, where we dive into the latest in media, picking the brains of top faculty and staff around the Gator Nation. I'm Matt Abramson, director of WUFT Media Services, with Miranda Morissette.
Hey, what's up?
And August Mullis.
Hi.
Today we're speaking with Dave Coulier, director of the Brechner Center's Freedom of Information Project. Thanks for joining us, Dave.
Good to be here. Thanks.
So let's start off with your early career. You earn your bachelor's degree from Western Washington University. Why did you study journalism, and what was your career aspirations at the time?
Well, I started in high school, but only because I couldn't get into Spanish. So I had to take an elective. It was full. So I had to take this other class, newspaper. And so I did it. And as soon as I got my first byline, I was hooked. So it all started as a freshman in high school, and it just kind of went from there. Did it all through high school, worked at my local paper, went on to college nearby where I lived, and it was just a blast.
So did you see yourself going into reporting, or where did you see your career going?
Yeah, well, I was going to be a foreign correspondent in Central America, tromping around the jungles, covering the Contras and the Sandinistas. That was what I had hoped to do with the Spanish I eventually took in college, but it didn't work out that way. I didn't end up tromping in jungles, but that's okay. It still turned out fine.
So after graduating, you worked for several newspapers in the Pacific Northwest. Tell us about that time as a reporter and editor and the types of outlets you worked with.
Well, it was so fun. I mean, journalism back then was awesome. You ran around, you got to cover stories in depth. You interviewed all sorts of different people. You learned every day. That's the fun thing about journalism it's just something different. And every day it's new exploration. So whether it's murders or being shot at, you know, I was shot at 3 times that fortunately they missed, chased by gangsters, you know, you name it, talking to presidents, governors, members of Congress. And just darn interesting people every day.
Are there any stories from that time that you felt like made a huge impact in the community you were serving?
Well, I don't know. You never know for sure what impact. I mean, sure, you can get some bad corrupt officials fired, or you can get laws passed to make the world a little better. But you never really know the impact, I don't think. Story by story, it's something that I wish we knew better of. We take it for granted as journalists that maybe we make impact or maybe we don't, but I think journalists do. In fact, the research I've seen since shows that journalists do make impact, and it's so important for society. Without it, we're toast.
Hi, this is August. Speaking of research, you ended up earning your master's degree and PhD from Washington State University. I was wondering what motivated you to continue that kind of education, and I don't know if there was any research involved, but why did you go back to study at that point?
Right. Yeah, that's a good question. Well, it's about the time when the news industry was really starting to tank, and as an editor, I was having to lay off reporters, and I saw the impact that had on our newspaper and the community, and it was just really frustrating. And, you know, a lot of journalists mid-career sometimes try different things. Maybe they go to law school, be a lawyer, or PR or something else. And I thought I would try education. So there was an opening to advise the campus paper, and I thought that would be fun. I can earn a master's degree and see if academia is cool. If it isn't, I can go back into the industry with a master's degree. Well, it turned out I liked it a lot, so I just continued on and got the PhD. I studied with a professor who was an expert in access to government information, and she graduated from the University of Florida, CJC, from the Brechner Center. She earned her PhD under Dr. Bill Chamberlain. And so I was really inspired by her and this area of research that I thought was so important, because as a journalist, I used public records all the time, and I was really unhappy with how the government was becoming more secretive, hiding things from the public. So that's just kind of how that all started. I'm lucky to have gotten a PhD from Wazoo, go Cougs, and now make my way to this side of the country.
What was your thesis for your PhD?
It was, I did a bunch of surveying of the public to find out how they felt about journalists accessing public records and the right for people to get information from the government, and when they supported it and when they didn't. So it really got a good sense of how the public views all this and what we could do to maybe improve public support for this, because it's so important.
And what was the insight that you took away from that? What does the public feel about access?
Well, they strongly support it in the abstract. They think, of course, democracy is important. It's America. But when you start talking about details, sometimes that support drops, you know, when they start thinking, well, yeah, things should be open, but not that information. You know, that should be secret. And so it's nuanced. And we have to understand that it's complicated, like so much of everything.
Miranda here. So in 2006, you then became associate professor at University of Arizona. I wanted to know how your time was there and what kind of subject matter did you teach?
Oh, that was great. I was so happy to go there. Tucson's just amazing. I taught just about everything there that they offered other than broadcast courses. Ethics, law, reporting, data journalism, access to public records. I taught a class there for 17 years. On that, and anything else that was needed, introduction to journalism, that sort of thing. And I was director of the school for a while, so doing administration, which I wouldn't advise anybody to do, but, you know, for some people who are good at it, I hope they, I wish them well. But, yeah, it was a lot of fun.
At the time, you were involved with several professional organizations such as SPJ and AEJMC. What is the value of being involved with these types of organizations?
Oh, it's so important. You know, there's about 60 journalism organizations out there, nonprofits, and I was lucky to be involved with the Society of Professional Journalists. I was their Freedom of Information Chair for a while and their national president, and I think it's so important that journalists unite and work together. Because if we don't hang together, then we're all going to hang separately, as Benjamin Franklin said. So we got to work together. And there's so many good organizations to do that with. Investigative Reporters and Editors, or, you know, you name it, just about any type of journalism you can find a group for. And, you know, they advocate for journalists, and that's important today more than ever.
Speaking of government transparency, it seems your career has focused a lot on that access to information. You've even testified before Congress, not once, not twice, three times, regarding FOIA, which is, of course, the Freedom of Information Act. How did those experiences play out? How did you get to be in that position? What did it feel like?
Well, it was fun, and it was because of my national advocacy through SPJ, pretty much. Because of that, they asked me to, you know, tell members of Congress what's happening in this realm, and it's not getting better. It's getting bad. Secrecy is on the rise all across America at the local, state, and federal level, and members of Congress need to hear that, and they need to hear solutions. So that's what we do. In academia, we come up with solutions. We do research, we identify the problems, and we identify what we can do about it. So I think that's kind of why they asked me to go there and also talk about how it impacts journalists. And it was a lot of fun. You know, they asked good questions, and there's robust debate. I think I got in an argument with Al Franken. He didn't appreciate that probably, but that's okay. Where we can debate things. So.
Was it a moment like, you can't handle the truth?
Right. Well, it was weird and awkward, but fun, you know. I don't think members of Congress are used to some folks, you know, challenging them, mm-hmm. and especially in their own house. So, but that's what journalists are supposed to do, right? And we're just here to, as academics, to provide information and facts as best we can find them.
In 2019, you began serving as the board member for the National Freedom of Information Coalition. and is editor for the Journal of Civic Information. Both are based out of Gainesville. What are these organizations and what did your involvement consist of?
Right. Well, the National Freedom of Information Coalition coordinates all these state Freedom of Information coalitions around the country. And I was active in ours in Arizona and wanted to help the national cause. And so helped on the board. They were struggling and still are. Nonprofits have a hard time keeping funding sometimes. So they were based at University of Florida here on the third floor of Weimar. And then I was president for 5 years, and we moved it to Virginia. But anyway, it was basically we're just trying to keep these causes going across the states, and it's still going. And you know, about 6 years ago, I helped my predecessor before I even came here start the Journal of Civic Information. So we started that, and it's still going. It's just a coincidence that I'd end up working here 6 years later. So, yeah, I'm lucky. But it really wasn't a coincidence that this is the place I would choose, because it is the best and really only research and education center in freedom of information at a university in the country. And it's a unique, special organization that you won't find anywhere else.
Okay, so you're teasing my next question. You became the director of the Brechner Freedom of Information Project. What motivated you to leave University of Arizona and come to UF? And what does the Freedom of Information Project entail?
Right, yeah. Well, when my predecessor, Frank Lamonti, decided to join CNN as legal counsel, which is an amazing job, I just thought, shoot, what an opportunity. I mean, again, this center is well supported by the CJC. It has a hunky endowment that allows us to do things with it. And it's more important than ever. There's declining support for this sort of work across the country. Organizations that are folding, News Leaders Association and Sunlight Foundation and Open the Government, and these other nonprofits that are now out of business. And there aren't many to carry that banner. Well, Brechner is one of those. It's been around almost 48 years, so it's been around a while. It's done great work. It's produced so many amazing people, PhDs, like my advisor at Washington State, Bill Chamberlain, who really worked with us, as well as Joanne Smith and Sandy Chance, Clay Calvert, a bunch of folks who worked at Brechner over the years have done amazing things. And I made a difference, and I kind of was hoping to do that. You know, I had fun teaching journalism at Arizona for 17 years, but I decided, no, I'm going to retire from teaching, which is what I did, gave up my tenure and everything, and took this position, administrative staff director, to run this center. And it's been amazing, and I'm glad I did. I know it's a weird time to give up tenure, whether in Florida or across the country, but there's so many challenges we have that we have to stand up and, you know, get roll up our sleeves and get to work. And that's what we've been doing.
What do those projects entail?
Right. Well, what we've done in the past year or two, we've taken on National Sunshine Week. That's been around about 20 years to promote the right to know all around the country to get the public involved. So we have been rebuilding Sunshine Week, and that's great. We added a national conference called Sunshine Fest every March now, and we bring together people from all around the world, actually, in the country, to talk about these issues and what can we do to make democracy better and stronger through transparency. And so that was a hoot last March in Washington, D.C. We started creating a tracker for legislation so people around the country can track legislation that would impede your right to get government records or attend public meetings, government meetings. So that's something we're working on and continuing to build. And then we continue to do research. We've kicked out research studies and projects. We've lots of writings. We've trained thousands of journalists and citizens over the past 2 years. Totally, in my 20 years now training journalists, I think I'm up to about 15,000 people.
Oh, that's it? That's all?
Yeah. And in fact, tomorrow I'll go do a talk in Tallahassee, and then the next day to New Orleans for a conference. And then the following week as well, Investigative Reporters and Editors doing 3 training sessions for journalists there. So we try to help journalists do better work, but we also talk to average people and we help them understand their rights and how they can get government information. Because this is a right everybody enjoys, not just journalists, and something everybody should know about.
I feel like we've heard the term FOIA before, but what is the landscape? You mentioned that that secrecy is kind of on the rise. What is FOIA originally, and how is it being used today, different than the expectations?
Right. Yeah. Well, you know, in 1966, Congress passed the Freedom of Information Act, or FOIA, and that's to guarantee your right to get records out of the executive branch of our federal government. Now, some states already had public record laws at that time, even since the 1800s, and Sweden had one since 1766. So it's not a new concept, but it didn't really pick up steam till about 60 years ago. And every state has a public records law, allows you to get records out of your public cities, counties, schools, public universities like the University of Florida. And, you know, they give you these rights, but, we know in our research that we've done at Breckner that it's getting harder and harder to get these records despite these laws. Government agencies are getting really good at gaming the system, and they use these laws actually as tools of secrecy to say no to people. And so, for example, 10 years ago, if you asked for a public record in this country, on average, you'd get it about half the time, which still isn't very good. That's an F in my grade book. But nowadays, it's down to about 30% of the time. And in some states, it's terrible. Alabama, maybe 10% of the time you can get a public record if you ask for it. And that's just atrocious. Because what happens if we have a secret government? Then we know bad things will happen. Corruption will expand. Waste of tax dollars. Lots of bad things will happen to people. And, you know, government transparency is one of the foundational principles of a democracy. So if we lose that, we could lose democracy.
And I know you've got examples and anecdotes of folks around the country experiencing different levels of access or lack thereof. Do you have any stories or any that you would share that kind of personify this broader issue?
Well, it's everywhere. It's all across America, every town, all 3,500 and some counties in the nation. People are trying to get information and they're denied. Reporters are trying to get information and they're denied. And they're just trying to educate the public is all. But they can't get the information, the good, hard facts that people need. And, you know, this affects our daily lives. We know from research that these public record laws, they improve drinking water quality. They make your restaurants safer, cleaner, you know, so you don't throw up after you eat. They save lives. They lower corruption. For every dollar spent on public records journalism, society benefits $287.
Oh.
That's a huge return on investment. I mean, this actually matters. It's not just some principle of democracy. It just helps us in our day-to-day lives. And we don't see it. It's behind the scenes, right? And it's just something that we take for granted. But if we lose it, we're going to know for sure.
Miranda here. What are some common issues that people run into when requesting public records?
Yeah, the most common issues we're seeing today are being ghosted. Government agencies won't even respond, which is illegal. And yet they just ignore people. Or they'll say, we can't find any records that you want. We looked, I didn't see anything, even though the records are there. Or they'll say, oh, you can't have it because of this exemption in the law, whatever. Sometimes they just make stuff up. We're just seeing more and more of these denials over time. And or they'll say, oh, you can have them, but it'll cost $5,000. And most people, including journalists, don't have that money. And so really the system's being gamed, and it's and people are being shut out of information, particularly in our research at Breckner shows, people who are trying to get records in the public interest, journalists or nonprofits or others trying to expose problems in society. They're the ones getting shut down the most. Corporations who are getting this information to make money and profits, they don't have as many problems. They get the information. But boy, if you want to hold our government accountable, it's another story.
I'm Glenn Richards from WUFT Amplified. If you're like me, you appreciate how special the local music scene is here in North Central Florida, featuring indie rock, hip-hop, bluegrass, and so much more. WUFT Amplified is Florida's music series, filmed right here in Weimer Hall. This show rocks, guys, seriously. And you might not realize that WUFT Amplified is produced entirely by UFCJC staff and students. To watch past episodes and discover your new favorite bands, check out wuft.org/amplified.
So you mentioned it briefly earlier, but tell us about this National Secrecy Tracker. What's the impetus behind it? And or can you tell us, is it a secret?
Not a secret at all. It's, you can go to secrecytracker.org and check it out. The reason we wanted to develop this is because there would be groups that would monitor legislatures for when they tried to sneak through laws to make things secret, either press associations or state FOI coalitions. But they've been hurting over the years, you know, funding cuts and just like the media. And so there are more and more states where nobody's watching. Nobody's seeing what the legislators are doing. And no one is catching these secrecy laws. So we wanted to use AI, which we did, machine learning, to create a tool to better find this legislation as it's being proposed, spot it, and then be able to tell people, hey, in your state, they're proposing this. If you want to do something about it, now's a good time. And so we're trying to bring light to a lot of these laws that will hurt the public's right to know. And, you know, if people want to do something about it, great, you know. And if they don't, well, that's up to them. But at least they'll have the information to make those decisions.
It seems like, I don't know how big your team is, but that's a lot of work. If a student was interested in your work and wanted to get involved, how could they?
Yeah, we've had some students helping out since I've been here. Well, forever since Breckner's been around. Oftentimes, grad students we welcome. Love to mentor PhD students or law students. We've had undergrads. So we've had undergrads working on research projects this past year. And we don't have a lot of people to mentor students, so we don't handle a lot. But for those few who are really into this sort of thing and passionate, it can be a good outlet. There's so many good opportunities at the CJC, and, you know, this is just kind of one of those.
I had a question. You talked a lot about common issues that people run into when requesting public records. Simple question, but how do everyday people request public records?
Yeah, you know, everyday people use public records for all sorts of things. Sometimes it's for their own personal needs. So, for example, the biggest records requests at the federal level are immigration files for people getting records for their immigration cases. And, of course, that's timely right now. People will, you know, get police reports if they get an offender bender or a wreck. They need the police report for their insurance purposes. Sometimes you want to find out what schools are good in your community to move to for your kids to go to. And one study shows that people rely on these public data about school performance to choose where to send their kids to. I use it all the time if I'm looking for a place to live. I'm backgrounding the neighbors. I'm looking at the zoning nearby. I'm looking at traffic counts. I'm looking at all sorts of information, flight patterns of the airport and the noise before I buy a house. So there's a lot of applications for everyday life in public records. And unfortunately, though, people don't know that. They don't teach that in high school or college. And so most people really don't even know all the amount of information they have access to if they would and they don't know how to get it. And it's very intimidating. So we should really change that in the U.S. We should teach that in school. You know, in Mexico, in some states, they require that being taught in school. And in Mexico, most people understand their rights to government information and use it because they have a very active public education campaign. We don't have that in the U.S. And as a result, people are left in the dark. So, you know, that's another thing that's important with Sunshine Week and what we do. We got to get the public to understand the value of this for their own personal lives and the benefits of their communities.
Sunshine Week is one of the most visible things that your organization does. Tell us what that entails, where that takes place, who's involved.
Yeah, I mean, it was started by newspapers to try to promote the right to know. And they would run editorials and stories once a year in mid-March and promote it, that sort of thing. And they still do. And we're taking it to the next step to just trying to get that into the public's hands through social media and other venues so that they could see that what their rights are. So we're still working on that. It's hard to reach the public. You know, people are busy. They have a lot of things that they're spending their time with reading. And so to get in front of their eyes is a challenge because there's so many important issues, right? And so everybody's vying for the public's attention. But we'll do what we can. I'd love to get some celebrities to tout it. That would be great.
All right, we'll come.
And we get Taylor Swift and Beyonce and some others to, you know, jump in and tout it. That would be awesome.
Do you hold Sunshine Week in DC every year or does it change locations?
Well, the first conference we had for Sunshine Fest was in DC this last March. And we're going to do it again there in March next year, kind of expand it, go longer days. People were really excited. They thought it was fun. And then we'll probably take it to other cities beyond that. We'll move it around the country so that everybody has a chance to go. We want to make sure access, you know, isn't an issue for people.
One of the things that is the largest part of your career, it appears, is your authoring of journal articles and contributing on books. Tell us about that portion of the work you've done. And how that interplays with your teaching and everything else in the academic space.
Yeah, well, you know, of course, as an academic, you have to write stuff and publish stuff or you lose your job. So yeah, I wrote academic articles for peer-reviewed journals that four people have read, and I kept my job. I wrote the textbook, though, on accessing public records, and that I felt was more important. And so that's been around, 15 years now, and second edition, and it's something that's assigned in a lot of journalism courses around the country, the Art of Access, Strategies for Acquiring Public Records, and as a guidebook for journalists and others, too. But really, the publications, that just, to me, I don't think they have huge reach overall, you know? I mean, I think there are other venues of getting the word out that get a lot more people, but they do give you the credibility so that you can testify at Congress or do these sorts of things. So really that's what that's all about. Cause I suspect very few people have read anything I've written. So,
well, is there anything out of all of those articles, anything that you're the most proud of having published?
Probably the textbook on acquiring records, because there's nothing out there like it, never was, and it's important. And I'd like to take that material and actually repackage it and just put it on the Breckner website for free for everybody. So don't tell the book publisher, but I'll rewrite it all. But I think that sort of thing should be available for everybody for free. And we'll probably create a course, online courses for working professionals to help train them in this. Might charge a little, you know, but through the CJC.
Well, you did write the book on it, so it would be appropriate.
It would be. And again, we want to get it out there, and we want to get these tools in front of everybody so they can empower themselves, because that's what it's all about.
Dave, you mentioned the Breckner Center does research. Is there any recent research that is worth highlighting?
Well, it's just all the time. I have one paper that will be published that talks about how states with newspapers that are hurting, like fewer newspapers, more newspapers go out of business, press associations that don't have much of a budget, they have greater government secrecy. You know, basically, I have data that shows that strong journalism means more open government, accountable government. It's there. The data show it. Another paper shows that this community of freedom of information is not very diverse. It's actually very heavily skewed toward white, male, affluent, educated, liberal folks. And that's a problem, because this is supposed to be for everybody, whether you're, you know, a person of color or a woman or a mega person in a rural community. You know, everybody deserves information. And so, you know, that's an issue we have to tackle, because it shouldn't be just set aside for the elite, right? Or special classes. And that's what our data shows it really is. So that's important. Even though some people would object to this area of research, we got to do it anyway. And then there's other studies too that we just keep working on. We're looking at what they call vexatious requests, when people overburden government with lots of requests or huge requests, where it's really too much and it's not fair to the agencies. They can't handle that. So what do we do about it without restricting the flow of information? So we've been working on a 2-year study to try to figure out solutions for that, and we'll be wrapping that up this summer. So yeah, it's a lot of research to try to figure out what's going on and how we can make things work better. And then we try to get out there and hopefully get things working better.
We're speaking at it very theoretically. I still want to push to see if there's any example, whether Florida-based or otherwise, that would kind of explain to the average listener what's happening. So whether it's someone in Cancer Alley trying to get data and not getting it, but we still find out after the fact that there's something related. Is there any example that we can kind of put out there that helps explain this to the lay listener?
Yeah, you know, boy. And we try to highlight average people's struggles in getting information for Sunshine Week. We feature you know, people who are fighting for this, like a high school student in California who heard a rumor that there was a problem with the drinking fountains and they were shut down. And so she submitted a public records request and found out that there was lead in the drinking water in their high school. Well, they weren't going to tell the students that. It wasn't going to be in the PTA newsletter. The students only found out when this one student submitted a public records request and got it. So yeah, I mean, there's these sort of things that happen all around the country, and they're special cases because too often most people aren't told about these things. And that's when bad things happen to us, when we're kept in the dark about these important issues that affect our health and our children and our, you know, our tax dollars being wasted. That's just so critical that we have open, transparent government.
I thought you were going to use the Epstein files example. I'm just kidding.
Yeah, well, that should be public too, as much as possible, protecting some victims and various things. But But yeah, and that'll come out. More of the Epstein files will come out and we'll see. There's fights over all sorts of things. There's fights over the Doge, workings, what they've been doing. They've been trying to hide and say they're not subject to FOIA. And so that's being reviewed by the courts. So it's a cat and mouse game. You know, government folks in power have information. They want to hoard it and keep it. And those of us who want to see what our government's doing want to get it. So, and we should demand that because we're in charge. You know, the government's not in charge of us. We're in charge of the government. And so we're entitled to see what they're doing with our tax dollars.
Mm-hmm. To actually request a record, is that going to be different depending on which agency it is? And further, the accountability, if there is any, for these just no returns on requests. What does that look like?
Yeah, well, I mean, it varies everywhere. Every state has its own law and own processes, but it's all pretty similar. Basically, everybody has a right to go in and say, hey, I'd like to see this information. And the government's required to respond to you by law. They often don't, but they're required to. And if they don't, or if they tell you no and they're breaking the law, you can sue them. But then, how many of us are going to hire a lawyer to sue over that? Yeah. Nobody. And even newspapers aren't suing like they used to. So people aren't suing for these records. And that's really the only main recourse. And government knows that, which is why the secrecy is increasing. They know they can break the law and get away with it. So we have to come up with new ways of enforcing these laws. Just having someone hire a lawyer and go to court is not going to work. The system's stacked against the average person. So we need systems like they have in Connecticut, where they have an independent commission where you can go to for free and say, hey, they won't give me this information. And the commission has the authority to force the agency to give you the information for free. You don't need a lawyer. There's similar systems in Pennsylvania, Ohio, in 60 nations around the world. But yet, it's fairly rare in the U.S. still, including at the federal level. So we need to change that. We need to restack the deck so we're on an even playing field or a little, you know, higher than the government so that we have rights to get this information. We don't need a lawyer to do it. So that's kind of what we're working on, is trying to rechange the system to make it work better.
And requesting, depending on the agency, is going to be different. How you do that?
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, it's all pretty much the same process, but you do your homework. You figure out what the agency has, and so you know what to ask for. And, every agency is a little different. Every person involved is a little different. You could have every clerk at an agency is different. So there's a lot of variance here.
All right. Final question is something we do pretty much every episode. What piece of advice would you give to aspiring journalists, whether reporting on government or otherwise?
Well, one, learn about your rights to get government information. That's and the power of what that can do for you personally and for your career. Journalists who know how to use these public records have a leg up. They have an advantage. They're going to get better jobs. They're going to keep their jobs. So definitely any journalist out there in any beat, sports, government, health, education, doesn't matter. Get to know how to get public records. And then once you do, go do it. Send out a public records request every week, one a week. Get good at it. It's like a muscle you have to exercise. If you don't use it, a little atrophy. And then be persistent, because you'll run into roadblocks, you'll run into walls, and it's frustrating. But the more you do it, the better you get at getting around those walls, and the better information you're going to get for yourself personally and for the public. And that's what it's all about. So go out there and do it, and don't take no for an answer.
I wanted to kind of thank you. I've got, in my personal life, I've got a friend who, he's a recent graduate in journalism, and he decided he wanted to focus on accountability journalism. What is it called?
Sure, yeah.
yeah, essentially what you wrote the book on. And even just when we talk, he loves to describe kind of the back and forth and the fight of getting those public records. And I just wanted to thank you for aiding that community. I'm sure it's pretty isolating for journalism, academics, working journalists. It's such an important issue, but of course, there are the people who have to advocate for themselves. So I appreciate your work there.
Oh,
and thank you for being here for that.
Yeah, thanks. Well, the CJC cranks out some great journalists. I mean, they're getting national recognition for doing this sort of reporting. They are going to be recognized at AJMC, I believe. Freedom Forum is recognizing some. They win awards. Everybody's noticing the stories being produced by the Alligator on Ben Sass, on other types of issues. That they're just doing great work. And it's really a standout university in this realm. So that's one reason that attracted me to the job as well.
I really admire your advocacy for accessing public information. And, you know, you've served on the board of a lot of these organizations, and I was wondering, you know, like, when you testified before Congress, if people are receptive to change.
I think so. I think people want what's best for the country. Different ways of going about that and different ideas, what people, you know, want to do. But yeah, people want to make the world better, ultimately, for themselves and for the country and for all countries, I hope. And this is one way of doing that. You know, there are now 140 nations that have public record laws, FOIA laws. A lot of them patterned after the U.S., which I would say is a mistake on their part. in fact, most countries have stronger laws than we do now. But yeah, it's a thing that I think every culture, every country thinks is important. And so we all have to kind of keep that momentum going.
Awesome. Dave, thank you for your time. Thank you for shedding some sunlight on the issue, broadly speaking, that is.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for being here.
Thank you so much.
All right. Great stuff.
The Communicator is a production of UF's College of Journalism and Communications. This episode is produced by Miranda Morissette. Thanks to our guest, David Coulier, hosted by Matt Abramson and featuring Miranda Morissette and August Mullis. Special thanks to WUFT. Go Gators!